is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We begin and we end our show today with stories about headaches. First, those caused by traffic.
We are seeing significant delays in certain portions of the Pike coming in from the west. So people can expect that that will continue throughout the week. And we're also expecting to see similar delays getting out of the city tonight.
That's Mass Highway Administrator Jonathan Gulliver talking about the commute into Boston on this first full weekday with the Commonwealth Avenue Bridge construction project underway. Another traffic story in the headlines today involves the e-scooter startup known as Bird. The company is meeting with Cambridge officials today about operating there. Boston has already warned Bird that any of its scooters operating within city limits will wind up in the tow yard. So listeners, we want to hear from you this hour. How's your commute? Would you take an e-scooter? You are allowed to complain even if you're on vacation right now, but we would like you to weigh in on this massive transportation project in Boston, how it's affecting you, and also what you think about e-scooter companies like Bird. Should cities be welcoming them in? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So first, for this first segment of our show on traffic headaches, we're going to turn to WBUR's Yasmeen Ammer, who's been following the story about the Commonwealth Avenue Bridge project today. Hello there.
Hi, Deb.
So we know the traffic was backed up early this morning on the Pike on this first full day of the lane restrictions because of the bridge project. But then officials told us later this morning that there was a decrease in overall traffic. You were at that press conference. Why did they say that happened?
Yep. So for the most part, people are taking these warnings seriously from officials. They've been saying it for a week now. So they've seen a 25 to 30% decrease in turnpike traffic. So that's when you compare it to the last couple of summer Mondays around the same time. And because the Mass Turnpike is operating at about half capacity, more are finding ways to get to where they're going. They're riding bikes. I saw more bikes coming into work this morning. They're taking the commuter rail, and the Worcester commuter line saw an uptick of about 250 additional passengers this morning. The MBTA Deputy General Manager, Jeff Gonneville, he says he wants more people to take the T.
Customers that are willing or want to try the commuter rail, we are encouraging you to take the commuter rail to avoid the turnpike. We've added additional staff and additional trains to be able to accommodate these new passengers.
So remember, the bridge replacement also affects the Green Line, the B line specifically, between Blandford Street and Babcock Street. That's operating via shuttle buses. So officials warn that it could make your commute a little longer, so be prepared for that. And that's going to be the case until this is all over on August 11th, hopefully.
Right. So even though there was a decrease in traffic overall, it is typically lighter this time of year. It's the summer.
Yes.
It's lighter. And of course, we've been hearing warnings and even seeing on the turnpike, warnings, stay away, stay away. So we've been hearing this from officials. That must have helped decrease volume.
Yep, and the clever signs up, all of that definitely helped. And today was the first real test when all traffic restrictions from the bridge would be in place. So again, here's Highway Administrator John Gulliver talking about this.
The only reason that we are seeing a success right now is because people are taking our advice and seeking alternate modes of travel and alternate routes into the city and possibly flexing their time and avoiding the area altogether. And they really need to continue to do that.
So continue to do that is the main part of that message. He says just we're not off the hook yet. He's worried that we might get a little too comfortable like we did last year. And then we saw a couple of days where there was another uptick in traffic. So just don't get comfortable. Keep listening to those warnings. So what you need to know for today is four out of the eight lanes on the turnpike are open right now. That's two inbound and two outbound. But starting at 7 tonight, they're going to close off one of those inbound lanes until 5 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay. And so overall, Yasmeen, two questions here. Last year, as you mentioned, the project actually ended ahead of schedule. That was when they did the other side of the bridge last year. So is it too early for us to know if that might happen again? And when is this project officially supposed to end?
So here are the official dates. You can expect the turnpike to fully open on August 6th, so all eight lanes. And the actual project is expected to end August 11th. That's when they'll open up the BU bridge and the ComEv. So last year, like you said, they did open up the Pike a few weeks early, but the actual bridge reopenings did take a couple of additional extra days because of rain. It is too early to say if that'll happen again, if that delay, a slight delay will happen again. But there are storms in the forecast for this week, and officials aren't too worried about the rain portion of the storms. But, I mean, if it starts lightning, that's when they'll have to pause because, you know, big metal equipment and lightning don't mix.
Mm, right.
So that could cause a delay, but we really don't know just yet.
Okay. WBUR's Yasmeen Ammer, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure.
Also, now we want to turn to a new way to fly by the traffic. Oh, we have so many puns we can use here. That's the idea behind the startup company called Bird. It's an e-scooter company that has landed in Cambridge and Somerville, leaving dockless electric scooters on sidewalks that are rented through an app. Now, earlier this month, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh said he wanted no part of these e-scooters, and he warned Bird against operating in Boston without getting permission first. Somerville officials say they are talking with the company. Cambridge officials met with Bird officials today. WBUR Bostonomics reporter Callum Borchers has been following this story. Hi there.
Hi there. I'm well played, Deb.
So tell us about these e-scooters. How do they work, and what's the intent here?
Well, they sort of connect to the story you were just discussing with Yasmeen, which is that if you are taking the Green Line, you would get off at Babcock Street or Blandford Street, I should say, and your ride would end. You've got the option to maybe hop on a shuttle bus or a blue bike, and in theory, an electric scooter might be another way to hop on. And what you would do is you would use the Bird app on your smartphone. It shows you where they are located. You rent the scooter for $1 up front and then 15 cents per minute after that. And you just sort of kickstart the thing with your feet a few times. You use a little thumb trigger. You squeeze a brake with your left hand. And it's pretty intuitive. The concern, however, from Boston officials is a couple layers of problems, and they've said stay out for now.
So does it look like a Razor scooter, or what does it look like?
The platform is a little bit wider than a Razor scooter. You're supposed to ride with both feet on, right? So a Razor, you would keep one foot off to kick and propel yourself. Mm-hmm. With a Bird scooter, you would do that just at the very beginning to pick up a little bit of speed, and then it can go up to 15 miles an hour. So it's not quite flying, as the Bird name would indicate, but at 15 miles an hour, you might get the sensation.
So why is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh so adamant about not allowing them in, warning a Bird that those scooters are going right to the tow yard if they try to operate in Boston?
I think there are two big things. One is safety, and that is something that comes up consistently in all of the cities that have pushed back against Bird. They say that riders aren't necessarily riding them safely where they should be, right? So they shouldn't be on sidewalks. They need to stick to bike lanes or on the streets. Users are supposed to wear helmets, but who's just walking around with a spare helmet to use? It's not like there's a helmet waiting for you to use on the scooter. So that's one aspect of it. The other thing, of course, is just business. Keep in mind that the city is also opposed to these dockless bikes that are not motorized, but the city has an exclusive contract. It owns a share of the blue bike system, right, with Cambridge and Somerville and surrounding cities, and it's a moneymaker for the city. I mean, Blue Cross Blue Shield just put $18 million into rebranding that thing. The city gets a piece of that. So if you're going to have a scooter system in Boston, presumably the city wants a piece too.
Right, but we also need the infrastructure, right? So there we go. But so I guess based on what you're telling me, it seems like regulation is the big issue here. We don't have enough rules to accommodate this at this point, so therefore we can't allow them. Is that essentially the argument?
That's been Bird's big stumbling block everywhere that they have turned. In their home city of Santa Monica, California, for example, they were in a big dispute with that city over not being permitted as a business, and they ultimately settled that earlier this year for $300,000. Small price to pay, by the way, for a startup that has raised $415 million in venture capital.
So how is it operating in other cities? How is Bird operating there? If you mentioned Santa Monica, I think San Francisco as well, Baltimore perhaps. What's going on there?
In many cities, it's operating in kind of a legal gray area. In San Francisco, it rolled out without seeking permission, as it did in Cambridge and Somerville. The attorney general in San Francisco sent the company a cease and desist order. In June, the company did ultimately pull back out of San Francisco, although it is hoping to return to the market there. In just the last several days, it has rolled out unannounced in Detroit and Cincinnati. Mm. This is the business model, and it's not an uncommon one in the tech sector, by the way. Just do it. Don't ask for permission, and see if you can clean things up later.
So what do we know about this meeting today in Cambridge?
Not a lot. The city has said that we can expect a statement about the meeting sometime this afternoon. Bird has told me that they will answer questions after the meeting has concluded, but neither side, by the way, has said who exactly is involved. So we don't know if this is at the highest level. Is it the CEO and the mayor? We're not sure. My expectation would be that we won't have a concrete resolution yet. And again, Bird and Cambridge right now is operating in a gray area. The city says you can't be here, but also says we're not impounding the scooters just yet.
And Boston, definitely out. Does Mayor Marty Walsh leave the door open for maybe talking like Cambridge is with Bird? Or what happens if you take one of these scooters in Boston? Does it really go to the tow yard? Are you ticketed? Like, what happens?
Well, Walsh has left the door open, but he said you can't just show up here unannounced and you can't operate here without a permit. What happens if you ride in Boston? Good question. I did see a rogue Bird scooter crossing the Comav Bridge to get around the construction on the first day on Friday, by the way. And this was a brave soul just zipping helmetless past all kinds of police detail that were manning that construction site and was not halted in any way. I think the real objection for the city is if you leave the scooter in the city, we will pick it up and take it to the tow yard. But if you just ride through the city, you're seemingly okay.
And now, isn't this like a lot of other startups? If we look at Uber, if we look at Lyft, if we look at Airbnb, I mean, these things just started and then government figured out how to regulate them. So is government now catching on and saying, no, 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 not until we get the regulations first?
Government does seem to be moving a little bit quicker than it did with Uber and Airbnb. But you're right, Deb, this is a pattern. It is a consistent strategy. And I spoke with David Chang about this last week. He used to run the PayPal office here in Boston. He's now an entrepreneur in residence at Harvard Business School.
If regulation is the potential roadblock and you find that there's some traction that can overcome that and create this groundswell, then great, then do it that way, right? You know, Uber's probably a great example.
So what Chang is saying there is you might think about trying to work with city officials up front, but if that's going to be costly and expensive and if there's a good chance they're going to shut you down, maybe just forget that whole step. Maybe just roll out your product and, as he said, see if you can get some traction. If you can build a groundswell of support and make it really difficult and uncomfortable for officials to totally shut you down later, maybe they slap you with a fine, maybe they regulate you to some degree, but chances are, in the meantime, you'll be able to have built up a big user base, and that's a worthwhile price to pay.
Build it and they will come. Okay. Callum, hold on 1 second. We want to invite our listeners into the conversation. We want to get some calls in as well. So listeners, how's your commute? What do you think about e-scooters? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Bob is calling from Arlington. Bob, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I would hop on an e-scooter in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. 100 years ago, Henry Ford put automobiles on the road amongst pedestrians and horse-drawn carriages, and with no permits. And they just let the public decide, and public decided, hey, we like cars. So I think we ought to just let the public decide, like your gentleman was just talking about a few minutes ago. Too many regulations. You know, the mayor's got to get together with each other, and you know this. You know, your ball rolls in my yard. We can't have that. Let's let the people decide.
Well, some folks are very concerned about safety and other things, and I think the city's argument might be if we let everyone come in, it could be chaotic. I want to bring someone else into the conversation right now, Bob and everyone. It's Jim Aloisi, former Massachusetts Transportation Secretary, now a principal at Trimont Consulting. Thanks for being with us in studio.
Glad to be here.
So your take on e-scooters. We heard from Bob. He said, why not? Let them. It will be easier. What do you think?
Well, you know, we're living in a time of disruptive change. The auto-centric era of the 20th century is gradually over. And so I think we need to accommodate this. I mean, I understand that if you don't go to the mayor and ask permission, that the mayor is not going to be happy about it. This company needs to understand the basic rules of politics. But Boston can't be like King Canute trying to hold the tide back, right? This is coming whether we like it or not. People are changing their mobility preferences. People want to move in different ways, whether it's e-scooters or safe cycling or even walking more. People are doing more and more of it. And so I don't think we can say let's wait until the government bureaucracy gets a regulatory scheme in place. Government needs to anticipate this stuff, and it needs to act quickly.
Hmm. I'm going to take another call. Z is calling from Watertown. Z, you're on the air.
Thank you so much. Hello.
Hello. Yes, so what do you think? What do you think of e-scooters, Z?
I'm all for any kind of alternative means of transportation, but I've got to say that Lime Bicycle has just dumped hundreds of bicycles in the Boston area. Every place I turn, I see them. I just did a drive from Needham to Watertown, and I just randomly counted the bicycles. I counted 47 bicycles in an 8-mile route that are just sitting, and several of them were knocked over.
So we have too many bikes. You think that
transportation, but I want people to think about them and use them. And I don't think it's part of the American culture quite.
Okay, Z, thanks very much for the call. Tom is calling from Waltham. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, I was in San Francisco about 6 weeks ago, and I used the electric Lime scooters there. I saw the Bird scooters and the Jump electric bikes, and they were a lot of fun, and they're very easy. It's much better to do those rather than taking an Uber or driving. And most people who are taking an Uber are only going a mile or two, and I think these are much better than taking an Uber or driving. And people just will quickly learn how to park them in a polite way so that they're not messy and obstructing the sidewalk. And it will give a good transportation option, which is better than driving.
Well, I think Mayor Walsh and other critics of this have said that there could be safety issues here, Tom. And could, you know, people are concerned about not just the parking on the sidewalks, but also about safety and who can make sure that these scooters are safe.
They felt very safe. It's no different than riding a bicycle. And some people ride with a helmet and some people don't. Of course, they should wear a helmet. But a scooter, you're only going 5 or 8 miles an hour. It's very safe. And in fact, you need to use both your hands. You can't look at your cell phone while you're riding the scooter. You've got to use both your hands. So I think it's very safe.
Great.
And I also think I see a lot of people using the Lime bikes. And that's great. They look so happy when they're riding. They don't own a bike, and yet they can ride a bike. So it's a wonderful thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much, Tom. And Jimmy Aloisi, I guess one question that comes to my mind when I hear Tom make those comments, that they, you know, alternative methods of transportation are very good.
Yeah.
Maybe they make people very happy not to be gritting their teeth behind the wheel of a car or stuck on a train somewhere, right? I get that. But do we have the infrastructure to deal with these new modes of transportation? And isn't that part of the criticism, that how can we regulate these safely when we don't really have the means to make sure that people can get in and out smoothly?
Well, we have the infrastructure. We just have to adapt it. You see, I think, you know, if we can't even begin to have a conversation about mobility safety without asking the question why we allow distracted driving, like the most unsafe mobility system that we've got in the city are cars. So let's be clear about that. Sure, you have a responsibility, whether you're walking with headphones on or whether you're cycling or using a scooter, to do so responsibly and safely. What we need to do, I mean, our streetscape is in place, but there are many of us who are beginning to talk about and actually get the cities to be responsive to things like dedicated bus lanes, dedicated safe cycling lanes. The infrastructure's there. It needs to be adapted to new uses, right? We're not going to enlarge streetscapes, but we can adapt those streetscapes. That means doing things that are generally sometimes controversial with people. For example, cutting back on the size and the width of automobile lanes, doing away with some parking strategically. So, you know, there has to be a little bit of give on all sides. But we have moved, as I said, from an auto-centric society. And for Boston to be responsive to the values of its citizens, and not just Boston, but Cambridge and Somerville, the inner core, we need to begin this adaptation of the existing infrastructure to respond to people's mobility desires.
And, of course, we also need to look at public transportation,
yes,
not just
do.
Bikes and scooters. We have to get back to the topic that this always comes to whenever we talk about traffic and transportation, right?
Yeah.
It's our public transit system.
Absolutely.
And the perennial promises that the public transit system is going to be improved and the perennial failures of it being improved. So what can be done really. It's hard not to feel hopeless in that situation. What can be done to try to bring all those things together? What's your suggestion?
Well, a lot is being done. You know, we're certainly investing in new red and orange line cars, and I hope there'll be an announcement that there'll be some investment in new green line cars. Folks like myself believe it's a good first step, not enough. We need to accelerate investment, not just in the state of good repair of the system, which has a $7.3 billion gap, but we also need to invest strategically in connecting and improving the system, connecting the blue and the red lines at Charles MGH so people can have access to health care and access to jobs and access to Logan Airport in a way they don't today, connecting Metro West and Worcester region to Boston and to Cambridge by a station at West Station at Alston Landing, where people, you know, we talked earlier about Commonwealth Avenue Bridge. I have news for everybody. The Turnpike on its best day is going to be probably worse than it was today, right? Today, people were afraid to use it. But on its best day, it's a congested parking lot, and right. It's not getting wider. It is what it is. We need to have a better alternative to get people from the Metro West and Worcester regions into not just Boston, but Cambridge, to access jobs and health care. The way to do that is to have a regional rail system that connects them much more frequently to a station at Alston Landing and then across the river using the Grand Junction line to jobs-rich Kendall Square. This mobility future is not a mystery. It's right before our very eyes. We need to come up with the resources to invest in it.
But we're talking possibly 2040. For that.
Well, I hope not. I mean, we have a lot of folks, myself included, have pushed back really hard, and the secretary has agreed to take a second look at this because Boston can't afford, the region can't afford, regional equity can't afford to wait a full generation or more to get the kind of mobility that is going to sustain those regions. I mean, look, Metro Boston, which is what we're talking about, Worcester, Metro West, right. City, that accounts for 75% of the state's jobs. It's 84% of the state's gross domestic product. If we don't give people an opportunity to access that those jobs and that opportunity, we're really defeating our own progress.
Callum, what are you hearing from folks about innovative proposals or proposals in general? Maybe they haven't been deemed innovative as yet, but ways to sort of, deal with economic growth and deal with better transit and how it affects the economy.
I think some of it comes down to meshing housing with this problem as well, right? So a lot of these neighborhoods that we've seen in Boston, the, for instance, branded Innovation District of Boston has also been built, I think, rather intentionally with a lot of housing in it. One of the complaints, of course, from folks would be that it is extremely expensive housing. But part of the solution to this problem is to get people to live closer to where they work. And that is not always easy. Waltham is another good example. We've seen some good reporting in recent weeks about the housing crunch in a place like Waltham, where the new inventory for homes is not keeping up with the job growth in a place that has become a popular outgrowth of the Boston high-tech economy. A lot of businesses that are getting priced out of Kendall Square and the Seaport are fleeing there, and their workers don't necessarily have places to live near where their new offices are.
Right, right. And Jim, you wrote something somewhat related to this in Commonwealth Magazine in terms of the concern about gentrification, right?
Yes.
If housing is put near public transit. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, we wrote that piece that's online today because I've been very concerned that when, and this is not a local issue, it's a national issue, when we try to improve transit and mobility in disadvantaged areas, people push back, and they push back because they fear that if you're going to give them a better bus service or a better T service, that you're going to trigger gentrification and they'll be displaced. And we've got to think about this issue in a serious way. So I'm suggesting a number of things, including really thinking about connecting the mobility investments with housing investments and commitments to rent control, commitments to keeping people in place through upzoning, the kinds of things that need to begin to go hand in hand. We can't think about mobility and affordability of housing, quality of life as silos, because it cannot be the case in the 21st century that people with lousy transit want to keep that lousy transit because we can't figure out how to give them a commitment that we're not going to hurt their quality of life or displace them. Right. We've got to sort that out.
Right. And let's just, before we run out of time, Governor Baker signed the state budget last week. One of his line item vetoes was a proposed pilot program that would have given a 25% discount on tolls during off-peak driving times. He said he vetoed it because he needs more data before he does such a thing. Well, thoughts about this? Do you think the state should look at congestion pricing as a way to... Really, I can't even believe you said that today was like a good day for the turnpike. I'm dreading that. But you know, it really to sort of help ease some of those problems.
I think congestion, first of all, that what he vetoed was not even congestion pricing. He vetoed a discount.
Yeah.
So
right.
let's all pause on that. But I think congestion pricing done fairly and transparently is a tool in the toolbox that we need to consider using. We know... everybody listening to this who attempts to drive into the city, north, south, or west into the city, knows that we're experiencing chronic traffic congestion, and it's debilitating, and it's costing us money, it's polluting our air, and eventually it's going to make people think twice about investing in Metro Boston. Mm. And so we need to think about regional rail, more frequent rail service through the region. We need to think about pricing. We need to think about, and pricing, by the way, is just a simple way of saying to people, there's a cost to using this limited asset during peak hour. Now, you got to be careful about equities, and you got to be careful about offering folks alternatives, which is why something like that ought to go hand in hand with an investment in more frequent, better inner city rail with dedicated bus lanes through the inner core. So you're right. Giving people meaningful mobility options. It's a lot to digest. But those things can go hand in hand together, and a lot of us are working hard to see it happen.
Right, because I think many people probably think, why not use Uber? It maybe cost me minimally more, and I don't have to deal with any of the aggravation of public transit. I can get door to door. It's convenient.
My biggest fear is that the transportation network companies like Uber and Lyft are going to siphon off transit riders to a point where they're really going to do harm to public transportation. And by the way, there's nothing innovative about me driving you in an automobile to get somewhere, right? Mm, that's not right. An innovative way to travel. The innovative business model is there, and I'm not against Uber and Lyft, but we've got to be careful. When we talk about, we're worrying about regulating scooters, we've done, in my judgment, a really lousy job at the state level regulating transportation network companies. And we need to think about best practices, what's happening in other cities like Chicago and elsewhere, and start doing that here where we're assessing them a fee, much higher fee than we are here. Here we're assessing a small fee, and we're spending half of it to resuscitate a dying taxi industry. That's just a misplaced opportunity. In Chicago, they're using that money directly to improve transit. We've got to deal with that issue sooner than later, or we're going to find ourselves behind the eight ball.
Okay. A topic for another show, I think. Jim Aloisi, former Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation and a principal at TriMount Consulting. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Also, WBUR Bostonomics reporter Callum Borchers. Thanks.
Glad to be with you.
Stay with us. Coming up, less than 100 days until the 2018 elections, we take a look at some of the big political races in Massachusetts. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.